Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Election day in the CAR. Voting is underway in the Central African Republic in a much-delayed election that many hope will end nearly 3 years of violence between Christians and Muslims since a 2013 coup. Security is high for Wednesday's presidential and legislative election, which was most recently delayed from Sunday to deal with technical difficulties. UN peacekeepers have been deployed to sensitive areas. More than 1.8 million people are expected to vote. The U.S. military says an Islamic State leader with direct links to the alleged ringleader of last month's terrorist attacks in Paris was killed in a coalition airstrike in Syria. Charafi al-Mudain was killed on Christmas Eve. ISIS recruitment the world over is a problem, but particularly in Europe. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with Abdulkader Zeno, an Indiana University regional analyst.
Those people would not have been susceptible to be recruited by IS if they did not feel alienated in their own countries. Europe has a big problem.
How can they address it?
What they're doing right now is the opposite of what they need to do. What they're doing right now is to increase policing, inclusive policing, into Muslim areas, into mosques, into institutions, when in fact they need to help those youth integrate, to become part of society. It's a long-term process, but that's the only way to go in Europe.
So has ISIS peaked?
It has already peaked, but however, it still has the ability to fight and to retaliate. All this may accelerate, and it may reach its demise in the next 2 years.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Burkina Faso has a new leader for the first time in nearly 30 years, as President Roch Marc Kabore took the oath of office on Tuesday.
Je jure devant le peuple burkinabé.
He promised to preserve, respect, enforce, and defend the Constitution in a ceremony from Ouagadougou broadcast live on Burkinabé radio and television. Mr. Kabore's swearing in comes 14 months after former President Blaise Compaoré was overthrown in a mass uprising sparked by an attempt to extend his 27-year rule. The African Union has threatened to place sanctions on Burundi's rival political factions if they fail to attend peace talks next month, as it pushes all sides to resolve their differences and avert more violence. AU Commission Chief Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma said sanctions could be placed on anyone whose action could jeopardize the inter-Burundian dialogue, including attacks by armed groups or refusal to communicate with the talks mediator. Representatives of the government and the political opposition are slated to meet January 6 in Arusha, Tanzania, to discuss ways to avoid more of the political violence that has plagued the country since late April. Turkey on Wednesday detained two suspected Islamic State members believed to be planning suicide attacks on New Year's celebrations in the country's capital. Turkish officials said the suspects were arrested in the Ankara area. The alleged plot involved suicide bombings in central Ankara, where crowds gather to celebrate the start of the new year. Turkey has been on alert for attacks since an October double suicide bombing killed more than 100 people at a gathering of peace activists outside a train station in Ankara. The Obama administration has expressed growing concern over an increase in civilian casualties in Syria since Russia began airstrikes. U.S. spokesman Mark Toner on Tuesday said Secretary of State John Kerry brought up the matter in a telephone call with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov.
NGOs have reported the Russian airstrikes in Syria have killed hundreds of civilians, including first responders, hit medical facilities, schools, and markets, and led to the displacement of over 130,000 Syrians in October and the first half of November.
Russia has denied causing civilian deaths in Syria. It says its airstrikes against what it calls terrorists, but what others call rebels, are carefully coordinated with the Syrian army to avoid all civilian targets. And prosecutors in the United States state of Pennsylvania have brought criminal charges against comedian Bill Cosby over the alleged sexual assault of a woman in 2004. The case deals with a former Temple University employee who told police that Mr. Cosby drugged and violated her at his home near Philadelphia. The 78-year-old Cosby has denied allegations from numerous women who have accused the entertainer of sexual assault and rape. For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. Joe Palca in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yisroel Heben coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
More than 700 members of the Rwandan rebel group FDLR surrendered in the Democratic Republic of Congo during 2015, according to the United Nations. The UN mission in the DRC says many of those who gave themselves up were in poor health, and a high proportion are children.
That's Nick Long reporting from Goma in the eastern DRC. Details coming up.
Also, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is again rejecting the deployment of AU peacekeepers in his country. And a panel of judges in Frankfurt, Germany sentences a former Rwandan mayor to 14 years in prison for his role in the 1994 genocide.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Sierra Leone, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is again rejecting the deployment of AU peacekeepers in his country. The Associated Press reports the president called the AU decision unacceptable and said the troops would be considered invaders violating the country's sovereignty. He warned a violation of Burundi's borders would be an attack on the country. The AU, meanwhile, is threatening to impose sanctions on all rival parties in Burundi if they fail to attend peace talks next month in Arusha, Tanzania. A tentative date of January 6th has been set for the talks, which are being mediated by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. The French news agency AFP quotes AU Commission Chief Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma as saying all those whose actions could jeopardize the inter-Burundian dialogue, as well as refusal to respond to the invitation of the mediator, shall be subjected to sanctions. Hundreds of people have died and many thousands displaced since April. That's when violence erupted after President Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office.
Polls have opened in the Central African Republic in a much-delayed election that many hope will end nearly 3 years of violence between Christians and Muslims since a 2013 coup. Security is high for today's presidential and legislative election, which was mostly recently delayed from Sunday to deal with technical difficulties. UN peacekeepers have been deployed to sensitive areas. 300 members of the armed forces on guard in the capital, Bangui, and 1,800 police standing watch in other areas of the country. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for all national stakeholders to commit themselves to ensuring that the elections are conducted in a peaceful and credible manner. More than 1.8 million people are expected to vote, choosing among some 30 presidential candidates and many others running for the legislature. Among the presidential candidates, former Prime Minister Martin Zeguli and Anicet Giorgis Dologoli are seen as favorites.
More than 700 members of the Rwandan rebel group FDLR surrendered in the DRC during 2015, according to the United Nations. The UN mission in the DRC says many of those who gave themselves up were in poor health and a high proportion are children. Nick Long has more from Goma in eastern DRC.
Estimates of the total number of FDLR fighters in Congo this year have varied between 1,500 and 2,500. In October, a group of UN experts on the DRC reported that 339 of the group's combatants had been captured or had surrendered over the first 8 months of the year. But last week, the UN mission in the DRC, MONUSCO, reported a surge in surrenders. The head of MONUSCO's Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration, or DDR section, Taz Grayling, announced the news at a year-end news conference.
Début de l'année jusqu'à présent, on a désarmé, démobilisé.
She said that from the start of the year up to December, 710 FDLR members have been disarmed and demobilized, of whom 315 were children.
Il y a eu une hausse de abandonnement de FDLR et entrée dans le système du DDR.
The rate of surrenders has accelerated since October, and those coming forward are in very bad physical and mental condition, she added. MONUSCO has also seen an increase in the number of wounded FDLR dependents, Grayling said. She appealed to the FDLR and other armed groups to move their families away from the combat zones and said MONUSCO and humanitarian agencies stand ready to help treat wounded dependents. Analyst Jason Stearns of the Congo Research Group questioned how many FDLR fighters are really turning themselves in.
There are many close in process.
He tells VOA that many people close to the disarmament process suggest the surrendering combatants the UN is talking about may have been sick or unfit combatants or may not have been combatants at all, but Congolese civilians arrested by the authorities. Stearns added that the FDLR cannot yet be written off. They definitely retain a capacity for military operations, he says, and are by far the largest and most dangerous armed group still in eastern Congo. Largely speaking, their command structure and hierarchy has not been affected by demobilization, he says. A Congolese expert on demobilization, Didier Bitaki, suggested on local radio recently that some Rwandan rebels may have claimed to be Congolese when they surrendered and so may not have been counted as FDLR. He called for closer monitoring of the DDR process of Congolese armed groups. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
A panel of judges in Frankfurt, Germany, has sentenced a former Rwandan mayor to 14 years in prison for his role in the 1994 genocide. The former mayor of Muvumba, Onisofori Rwabukombi, was convicted yesterday. He was accused of ordering an attack on a church in the eastern town of Kizugura, where Rwandans had sought refuge. The attack killed 450 people. At his trial, more than 100 witnesses described attackers using machetes, sticks, and hatchets. More than 800,000 ethnic Tutsi and moderate Hutu were killed in Rwanda's genocide. Rwabukombi sought asylum in Germany in 2002. He was arrested in 2010. After a three-year trial, a German court convicted him in 2014. A later appeal failed.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 1 million refugees and migrants have reached Europe by sea this year, with 80% of this record number landing in small, overcrowded Greek islands. The latest figures released today, which account for only migration by sea, mark an increase in the number of migrants reaching Europe by sea and land. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says refugees fleeing war and persecution are paying a heavy price in their desperation to find a safe haven. It reports 3,735 people have lost their lives this year, making the dangerous Mediterranean Sea crossing. This translates to an average of 10 deaths or missing persons every day. The UNHCR reports the total number of seaborne refugees this year is nearly five times higher than last, when just over 200,000 arrived in Europe, making this the biggest refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says between 2,000 and 3,000 people, most of them Syrians, continue to arrive by boats on the islands of the Aegean every day, despite the freezing cold temperatures and raging seas. He tells VOA the refugees fleeing conflicts in their countries take to the sea because most land routes into Europe are blocked.
There are restrictions at the border. We have countries that have erected fences along borders, land borders, and sea really remains the main viable option for those people. Unfortunately, what it means, though, is that smuggling is profiting in a major way. It means that people are drowning. It means that the systems for making this regular movement of people aren't yet in place.
Edwards notes Europe's migration crisis reflects what he calls an era of record-breaking forcible displacement. A recent UNHCR report finds the number of people who are refugees or internally displaced because of conflict now exceeds more than 60 million. The UNHCR spokesman says a major problem facing those fleeing to Europe is one of perception. He says this can be seen in the language people around the world use to describe this situation.
Many people still prefer to talk about this as a migrant crisis rather than a refugee one. Now, migrants migrate, refugees flee. Word choices really do matter. Both terms have become politically loaded in the context of the situation in Europe.
Under international refugee law, Edward says nations are obliged to offer protection to people fleeing conflict and persecution. He says efforts to blur the distinction between refugees and economic migrants are putting the lives of many people who have a legitimate claim to asylum at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehish Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Polls have opened in the Central African Republic in a much-delayed election that many hope will end nearly 3 years of violence between Christians and Muslims since the 2013 coup. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is again rejecting the deployment of African Union peacekeepers in his country. And according to the United Nations, more than 700 members of the Rwandan rebel group FDLR surrendered in the Democratic Republic of Congo during 2015. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The animal welfare and wildlife conservation group Born Free USA announced their top 10 victories in 2015 in their efforts to protect wildlife and endangered animals around the world. One major announcement this week involved increased protection for African lions. In response to a Born Free petition, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services recently listed lions in Central and Western Africa as endangered and lions in Southern and Eastern Africa as threatened. Kate Delewski is a program associate for Born Free USA. She explains the significance of this ruling as well as highlighting other wildlife victories in 2015.
This is a tremendous victory for lion conservation, something that we've been working towards for years now, and we're so, so pleased with this outcome. And this split between one section of the continent, lions listed as endangered, and another listed as threatened, is a really good development because it means Fish and Wildlife Service recognizes the difference between the lion populations in these areas and actually, in fact, the genetic differences between the lions in these areas. Because we see in Central and Western Africa, where they're now listed as endangered, that there are only about 900 lions left there, which is, you know, obviously an extreme situation, something that urgently needs to be addressed. And their habitat is so fragmented, and each of the populations in that area are so isolated that we're not seeing the opportunity for a lot of genetic diversity, a lot of ability to rebound and grow those numbers. So these protections are really crucial there.
In light of that, one of the biggest stories that came out of this year, 2015, was the tragic death of Cecil the Lion. So can you tell us about how this led up to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issuing this as an endangered species?
Well, Cecil was obviously an extremely tragic event. You know, the loss of this incredible lion, this really well-known lion in Africa. But what we have seen come out of it is tremendous public awareness and really this galvanized effort in the second half of 2015 to address trophy hunting and a greater recognition that trophy hunting does not aid conservation efforts, that it is just, in fact, you know, the ego of these hunters going to kill these beautiful animals. So after Cecil's death, we've seen a few new developments. And the end of the summer and this fall, we saw federal legislation introduced. Senator Menendez and Representative Grijalva introduced the Cecil Animal Trophies Act, which would help crack down on trophy hunting of species that are proposed to be threatened or endangered but are not yet listed, which is the situation that the lion was in until recently. We've also seen legislation in New Jersey, which tends to be so out front as far as states go in terms of wildlife legislation. We've seen two bills introduced there to crack down on the importation of trophy-hunted wildlife. And then we've also seen, following Cecil's death, over 40 airlines banned the transport of hunted trophies from the big five African species. So that's lion, leopard, elephant, rhino, and Cape buffalo. This is something that we've been working on for a really long time, but, you know, Cecil was the impetus, and the public outrage really around that incident was the impetus for these airlines to finally say, okay, no more, we won't transport these species.
And looking at some of the other animals and wildlife, there's been tremendous strides made regarding ivory and rhino horn legislation. Can you tell us about some of the highlights of this year?
There was really a groundswell this year of state attention toward ivory and rhino horn. In 2014, we saw New York and New Jersey, again, New Jersey being out front on this, ban or greatly restrict the sale of ivory and rhino horn in those states. And so in 2015, there were nearly 20 similar bills introduced across the country. A lot of other state legislators got inspired. And, you know, a lot of progress was made on a lot of those bills. Not all of them passed. But we did see a California bill signed into law on October 4th, which closed a loophole in that state that allowed for the sale of these products. And then a month later, Washington state voters approved a ballot measure which would end the trade not only in ivory and rhino horn, but in certain other endangered species as well.
Looking ahead in 2016, what would you say are your highest priorities and what future challenges lie ahead?
One of these priorities is pushing for more state bans on ivory and rhino horn sales because we feel like we have the momentum. We've seen, you know, really great victories in some states, and we think that other states have the potential to get these passed. So we're hoping to see that right off the bat starting in January. We also will be participating in CITES in 2016. There is a meeting in September in South Africa, nations across the globe coming together to look at several issues, but our priorities are a few. We're looking to increase global protection for lions on top of this recent ESA listing. We're looking to secure additional protection for 8 species of pangolins. We're looking to prevent any legalization of trade in rhino horn. We're also going to try and defeat any proposals advocating for any trade in elephant ivory. And additionally, we're going to continue to push to stop the intensive breeding of tigers in Chinese tiger farms. And the final thing that I want to highlight for 2016 is that we are in a really great position right now as a nation to finally end marine mammal captivity. Following blackfish a couple of years ago and various legislative efforts and a lot of public outcry in the past couple of years. We saw federal legislation introduced recently, the Orca Act, to phase out orcas in captivity across the country. And that, coupled with state action and with, you know, continued public demonstrations, I think that we can really make great progress on that issue this year.
Kate Dalewski is a program associate for Born Free USA. She spoke with me from Washington, D.C.
A new treatment which kills the virus that causes AIDS has cleared the first hurdle. The experimental drug provides a new approach in the fight against HIV. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
VRC01 is called a monoclonal antibody, a relatively recent development in the arsenal of bioengineered therapies. Monoclonal antibodies are similar to the antibodies produced by the human immune system, which are proteins that go after and destroy disease-causing organisms. But monoclonal drugs contain antibodies explicitly engineered by scientists to target a specific disease. They now include drugs designed to suppress the immune system, so autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and ulcerative colitis can be treated, and rev up the body's natural defenses to fight cancer. While they don't always result in a cure, in many instances, monoclonal antibodies significantly slow disease progression. In an early clinical trial involving just over 20 HIV-infected individuals, VRC01 was extremely effective in attacking and destroying the AIDS virus.
It was safe. There were no problems with doing it. And two, it temporarily decreased the level of virus in the people who are not receiving antiretroviral therapy.
Anthony Fauci is director of the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, whose scientists designed the HIV antibody. He says there was no response in the 15 patients who were taking anti-AIDS drugs, perhaps because that therapy had already driven the virus down to virtually undetectable levels. But among the others, an infusion of VRC01 totally knocked out the virus for 20 days in two participants. Others saw their virus load significantly drop for up to 3 weeks. However, a couple of patients in this group saw no effect, and scientists determined they were infected with drug-resistant strains of HIV. The results were published in the journal Science Translational Medicine. Since the virus reemerged a few weeks after treatment, Fauci says future trials are going to look at whether HIV can be suppressed with repeat infusions.
This is an important first step towards determining the feasibility of using monoclonal antibodies for the prevention and treatment of HIV.
Researchers have not ruled out using VRC01 to shield high-risk individuals against HIV infection. Fauci says it's likely the second phase of clinical trials, further testing the safety and effectiveness of the anti-AIDS monoclonal antibody, will take place next year. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Ihi Suhib in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more. Coming up next, right here on The Voice of America. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next time on VOA Africa.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Ebola is not a curse or spiritual infection. It is a deadly disease, a fever spread by contact with the body fluids of infected people. I am Dr. Kande Greaves. Its symptoms start with a fever, fatigue, and muscle pain. Within a few days, vomiting and diarrhea sets in, and victims lose about 4 liters of body fluid each day. Ebola is highly infectious. If you experience any of these symptoms, seek medical help immediately. You must wash your hands regularly. Do not eat or handle bushmeat. Stay away from people suffering from Ebola. And do not handle the bodies of Ebola victims. If you have had contact with someone who has Ebola, you need to have your temperature monitored daily for any change. Early diagnosis and treatment is critical to your survival. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza again rejects the deployment of AU peacekeepers in his country. More than 700 members of the Rwandan rebel group FDLR surrendered in the DRC during 2015. And polls have opened in the Central African Republic in a much-delayed election that many hope will end nearly 3 years of violence. Coming up, we'll have music from Sierra Leone, and in our feature segment, Zimbabweans in the diaspora are concerned over the lack of leadership renewal in their country. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. It's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you're kicking off with Zimbabwe football.
Kim, the Warriors of Zimbabwe are ending 2015, ranked 31st in Africa and 110th overall by FIFA, World Football's governing body. While those rankings really don't make you puff out your chest with pride, there does appear to be a positive vibe in the Zimbabwe camp ahead of the African Nations Championship, or CHAN, which kicks off January 16th in Rwanda. The Warriors are grouped with Mali, Uganda, and Zambia for the first round of the 16-team tournament, which features players exclusively from African national leagues. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's head coach, Kalisto Pasua, reportedly will sign a 3-year contract after the country's football association agreed to pay some of his outstanding salary and allowances. Reporter Michael Cariotti tells us more from the capital, Harare.
The good news is that Pasua, who was kicked out recently under controversial circumstances and reinstated following a public outcry and ministerial intervention, is about to sign a contract with the Football Federation. Pasua and Zifa were not at liberty to discuss the details of the contract, though the Warriors mentor indicated that he's currently looking into the contract handed over to him a few days ago. He did not have a contract under the Kadubele-led Zifa board, which was booted out of office 3 months ago and replaced by one led by businessman Philip Chiangwa, following accusations of failing to properly run soccer in Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, for the first time in years, Zimbabwe's Warriors are enjoying life in camp with no complaints over accommodation and food or non-payment of allowances. All the players scored are in camp with the exception of goalkeeper Takaba Mawai of Wange, who has returned home due to a shoulder injury, and teenage Hadebe of Islanders, who has been excused to attend to his sick mother. The Warriors are in camp preparing for the 2016 African Nations Championships, or CHAN, which will run in Rwanda from January 16 to February 7. There's so much happiness and unity in camp that Captain Danny Piri, who has not been training due to an injury, is promising that the Warriors will this time around reach the final or probably bring the trophy back home.
I would like to promise them that we'll go through to the finals this time.
Even coach Kalisto Pasua is a happy man after receiving his dues as a fulfillment of a promise made by Zifa president Philip Chiangwa during his election time.
What Zifa requires at the moment is somebody with well wishes to be able to, first and foremost, ensure that the contracts signed by footballers are honored, that they are paid on time, that the coaches are paid on time.
Just like his captain, Pasua is confident that the Warriors will negotiate their way from their group stages and go all the way to the final.
As team that played in the CHAN, we went all the way to the semi-finals, and we want to do better than that.
As part of their preparations, Chiangwa says they've arranged a friendly match against neighbors Mozambique at a date still to be announced. He told the players to compensate their loss of participation in the 2018 World Cup with a good show in Pan-African football, adding that Zifa on their part will do their best.
Missed out on the 2018 competition, so this is our only way of consoling ourselves, and we've got to do the best that we can. I trust that you can see they're practicing, and the coach is there with his full team there. I believe they have satisfied themselves right now that they should train and compensate the 2018 loss.
The last time the Warriors were the African Nations Championships, the Zimbabweans finished fourth behind winners Libya, runners-up Ghana, and third place Nigeria in South Africa 2014. Reporting in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. In pro boxing, one of the year's big fights took place November 21st when Saul Alvarez, a.k.a. Canelo, beat Miguel Cotto by unanimous decision in a middleweight world championship bout. In this sunny side of sports highlight for 2015, let's listen in to the post-fight verbal jabs from our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sonny.
Nnamdi, the Mexican star Canelo, defeats Miguel Cotto to win the vacant WBC middleweight title. You were ringside at the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino Events Center in Las Vegas, Nnamdi. First off, let's go to the scorecards and get your reaction. Unanimous decision for Canelo, 117 to 111, 119 to 109, and 118 to 110. Fair decision, Nnamdi?
All in favor of Canelo. A little bit wide. It could have been a little closer because some people felt the fight could have been a draw. And some people felt it should have been a little closer. But check this out. Some people felt, too, he should have paid that $300,000 by WBC and he would have been a little closer. You
and
know?
Then maybe the decision would look different.
Yeah, should have paid the $300,000 they demanded, you know.
So you're saying the judges could have been influenced by the WBC decision?
Yeah, because the president of the WBC, Mauricio Suleiman, was ringside, you know, and then he's the one that signs the checks for the judges, you know. I mean, come on, man, you know, you're fighting a Mexican and the president of the WBC is a Mexican and he's in the room, you better know what you're doing or you're not going to get the next assignment. You know?
Nnamdi, I watched the fight and I sort of agree with this one observer who said it looked like a natural middleweight in his prime, Canelo, beating an aging welterweight just past his prime, Cotto. Your thoughts?
Yes, at the age of 25, Canelo is still growing. And going into this fight, we talked about he may be able to cut off the ring and use his legs and push back Cotto. Cotto was unable to hurt Canelo. You could see Canelo was a prime middleweight, though he claims he's not 160 yet. So, but Cotto just hadn't, he didn't have the impact, you know, because pressure was on Cotto. He kept backing up all night.
So you're saying Canelo was never hurt by anything that Cotto threw?
No. Canelo had airtight defense plus his fast hands, and he was able to even look at the fight, look at his footwork. He kind of reminded me of Muhammad Ali's footwork, you know. You're looking at a fighter that's ready to fight, fan-friendly style, all action. He's got power in both hands, you know.
Nnamdi, you talk about that fan-friendly style of Canelo. Were the fans rooting for Canelo, or were they split in terms of the cheers?
It was a little bit more like a 60-40 split right there, because the Mexicans, they come out and they like action, you know. And their man was just delivering action, and the blows were just like the body shots, the movement, the jabs. He was delivering, and everybody were on their feet, you know. I mean, look back 6 months ago, millions of people opened their wallet only to feel cheated by this fight of the century, you know, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. But for this fight to end the year with all action, nobody complained. There was no knockdown, but, you know, we had a great time.
Nnamdi, as you told our VOA boxing fans last week, the WBC stripped Cotto of his WBC title for not paying sanctioning fees. Now the belt goes to Canelo. What's next for Canelo in terms of WBC requirements?
Well, Sonny, when they made a deal, there was a stipulation that allowed the fight Saturday night to happen. It was that the winner must begin negotiations with Triple G in 15 days. Because Triple G, mind you, is a WBA and IBF champion, but he's a WBC number one mandatory fighter. So will Canelo and Oscar De La Hoya start negotiating with Triple G? We will see.
How do you see that fight, Nnamdi, Triple G against Canelo?
I've always believed that Triple G is all hype, Sonny. Triple G have not really fought anybody, you know. I mean, Triple G with Canelo is going to be huge because the Mexican fans, they love Canelo. It's their number one guy. It's going to be a great fight. The kind of fight is a fight that will go into the Los Angeles Coliseum or the Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. That fight is enough to draw 100,000 people. But in a big fight like that, we have to negotiate. We have to look at pay-per-view numbers, Sonny. The last Triple G fight was 150,000.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moueta. Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. On the Facebook front, I posted a photo of the late, great Harlem Globetrotter Meadowlark Lemon helping actress Goldie Hawn spin a basketball on her right index finger. One of my Facebook friends, Mike Houle, saw the photo and responded, "Love this pic, Big Son." The black and white photo was taken in 1978 by Associated Press photographer Jeff Robbins. Meadowlark died on Sunday, December 27th, at the age of 83. Meadowlark Lemon delighted Goldie Hawn and millions of fans all over the world with his amazing basketball skills and on-court comedy routines with the Globetrotters. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny, and listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, traffic, a universal problem for Africa's mushrooming urban centers. And next, Zimbabweans in the diaspora concerned by the lack of leadership renewal in their country. But first, some music. It is Fulani of Sierra Leone with African Children.
Fulani featuring Apocalypse Smoke. Ella, Black. Get up, yo. Get up. For the children, yo. History. I and I, my brethren, born in Konoko, Dutown, Sephardu, 15 Bangwa, Sri Land of Gold and Diamonds. My man, the many swear, Papa moved to the city of Freetown. Reside at 45 regions to Bambagato, within another Nadayana, by the bridge, so hungry at night, long must Arata go eat on the Futo. Hello, the gold. But when morning comes,
me go feel pain under me Futo.
Hello,
African children cry. Children cries, please stop your crying. Keep your head. Remember, we used to walk 6 miles every other morning
touch bucket filled with water, pan, we head me neck and back, paper fire. Body all in pain, feel sick. Membrane insane. After we go memorize the only Quran, read our Bible, go to school, hot mental. Teacher go beat with for timetable, Lord.
Jesus Christ and little children are like the kingdom of God. We don't turn with back from within kingdom. Not to their fault. You can kick an old man for what he is, but you can't kick a young thug. Bad bush not effort to go away with big kingdom. Children should be educated, nourished, healthy. Them life go flourish for our children and the future. It takes a village to raise a child. The valley of a shed is not known until he cut down the tree. I said, for money, said, one Africa, one unity. One black people, one destiny.
African children cry, please stop your cries.
Keep your head up.
The African children cry, please stop your cries.
Keep your head up.
African children cry, please stop your cries.
Keep your head up.
The African children cry, please stop your cries.
Please keep your head up.
Danko fai danko alawadi barki e bengure ya danko ne danko danko ba danko alawadi barki e aduna ya yeah what
he me wale jange jule yo
keep your head up
he me wale jange jule yo
keep your head up, never give up. Even though the position you in got you fed up. Work hard and get your bread up. Anything is possible if you put your mind to it. Rise up and be a leader, my brother. We need more love than hate, my brother. Stay focused, stay strong. Making moves in the early morn. Gotta get my hustle on. No more poverty, no more struggling.
Young kids are dying, mothers are crying. Keep your head up, even when the world is lying. With time flying, pain it ain't no denying. More strategizing, we're analyzing. Burn dirty, so my life I'm sanitizing. With tears and children crying on the ground, breathless line. Never had a chance to let life and live in trifling. Left beside, then what's right or wrong when they don't know.
Demon, Wale, Chung, and Julio.
Trying to plant my dreams in your mind and watch them grow.
Watch them grow.
And watch them grow.
One Africa, one unity, one black people, one destiny.
African children cry, please stop your cries.
Keep your head up.
The African children cry, please stop your cries.
Keep your head up.
African children cry, please stop your cries.
Keep your head up.
African children cry, please stop your cries.
Please keep your head up.
Fulani of Sierra Leone with African children.
Well, traffic, it's a universal problem for Africa's mushrooming urban centers, but Uganda is trying a new approach. For the first time in three decades, passenger trains are once again chugging in and out of the Kampala train station. But this time, they are bringing in commuters from a suburb outside of the capital. Sergino Rusblad has more.
This is a normal rush hour in Kampala. Compared to the streets, the train station is rather quiet. City officials hope that this will change.
It's been need for us to move the commuter passengers within the city so that we're able to reduce the jam that we really see, especially during the peak hours, both in the morning and the evening.
Kampala hasn't had commuter trains since 1992, when private minibuses called matatus took over the streets. The new train service is just one line, making three stops between the city center and the area of Namanve.
More comfortable and to bring me nearer to my workplace. It's also cheaper than the taxis and the buses.
I'm fed up of the jam on the road. The jam used 100 for over 2 hours. Just to get in Kampala, but here I only take only 40 minutes. yet the fares are also fair, let me say. 1.5 as compared to 2.5, a wide difference of 1,000 shillings.
Since the 1970s, Kampala's population has exploded. Most people live outside the city. In just the last decade, the number of people in the suburbs has doubled to 2 million. The jams have become the top challenge. This new train line is a test to find a permanent solution.
It's going to be a pilot project for 1 year. It's going to help us really be able to get the required information, the data that we can use, so that we're able to get to a full-scale operation.
In 1 year, the Ugandan Railway Corporation is hoping to transport 10,000 people, a challenge as people haven't exactly been flooding to the rails during the first week. Taxis and minibuses are simply more convenient for some people, at least for now. The train is the second project the city government has launched to curb traffic. In May, city buses started to run and their popularity is slowly picking up. Serginho Rosblat for VOA News, Kampala.
Zimbabweans in the diaspora are concerned by the lack of leadership renewal in the country, not only in ZANU-PF, but all political parties in general. For a view of what Zimbabweans living outside the country are thinking of events that shaped 2015 in their country and related issues like international terrorism in their new chosen havens, we turn to political analyst Julius Mutyambizi in the United Kingdom. Mutyambizi tells reporter Sandra Niara, despite all the negatives that have characterized 2015, he's not giving up hope about his country one day coming out of the abyss.
Well, I haven't given up hope in terms of the potential that our country has. It still has potential in terms of succeeding. But the problem in Zimbabwe is a problem of governance. It's a problem of a failure to change leadership within political organizations. And that on its own is frustrating because at the end of the day, we don't have new thinking in all these political parties. And that then leads to a failure of new thinking and new governance or a new framework of governance, so to speak, at a national level.
You have been in the United Kingdom for more than 10 years now, and there is a big Zimbabwean community that is there. What is the thinking of the Zimbabwean diaspora when it comes to all these issues that you are raising? Is there anything that can be done by you and your colleagues who have been out there and gaining new knowledge and new information that could help your country, Zimbabwe?
Zimbabweans here are still engaged in the affairs of Zimbabwe. They want to contribute. I think they have a whole lot of things that they can contribute in. They can help and contribute in changing the Zimbabwean fortunes because they have acquired knowledge here. They have acquired a lot of skills that they can input in our country for the collective development of our country. The unfortunate thing is they are not being given the chance to do so. I'm not saying people who are in Zimbabwe are backward or they are secondary to us. No. But, you know, it's about complementing each other. You know, there is that element that's in the diaspora that's not there in Zimbabwe. If it's added to what's there in Zimbabwe, it can be a fuel that can lead to the development of our country.
We know that people in the diaspora are confused, or there is confusion back home in terms of what the Zimbabwean diaspora stands for. We recently saw that there is a policy that the government was coming up, but the confusion still remains. What would you say to the government in terms of the Zimbabwean diaspora community and what it can do to help move the country forward?
The government of Zimbabwe should remember that we are all nationals of Zimbabwe, one way or the other, and they shouldn't view nationals of their country with suspicion. You know, there is this brush that says, well, people who are in the diaspora are inclined to support opposition political parties. People in the diaspora will be inclined to support opposition political parties if the government of the day is failing. If the government of the day is not failing, then people in the diaspora will support the government of the day. It's just as simple as that. So, you know, it's myopic, it's short-sightedness in terms of view. And I think the government should have vision, should look beyond politics and partisanship, to start thinking for the country, to start engaging people so that they can contribute for the better, for the collective betterment of our lives. It's double.
Looking at Zimbabweans wherever they are, whether they are in the USA, whether they are in England, whether they are in Paris, there's a new dimension that is coming up. It is not completely new, but it has happened before. But this time around, the threat is serious. How are you surviving and living in a country where, you know, the security levels are being heightened all the time because of the new ISIS threat?
It's difficult. People get worried. You get scared for your own life. But at the same time, I'm a person of faith. You just say, well, God is, you know, is more powerful than all this kind of But at the same time, you don't want to give the feeling to would-be terrorists to say that we are winning. Because if you start drawing your feet back, you know, if you start not engaging in your own life, then it means that you would have given them victory. So you continue doing the things that you would be doing, and then maybe whatever happens.
Lastly, do you have a message for Zimbabwe this festive season?
I wish them a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and also say, well, I know it's time, it's a festival time, but don't drink and drive, don't do things that endanger your own lives and other people's lives. Just, you know, be normal, celebrate, but at the same time, you know, think about the future. You can't over-celebrate, if I were to put that way.
Political analyst Julius Mutyambiza in the United Kingdom talking to reporter Sandra Niara. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune into Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yais Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In many conflicts worldwide, human trafficking or modern slavery is often among the most tragic consequences. And despite persistent efforts to eradicate trafficking in persons, this abhorrent crime persists. According to the International Labor Organization, over 20 million people worldwide are victims of forced labor. On September 16th, U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations and December President of the Security Council, Samantha Power, stated that for groups like ISIL and Boko Haram, slavery has become one of their most versatile weapons of war, used to instill fear, to inflict suffering, to recruit followers, reward fighters, convert people of other faiths, reward combatants, and generate revenue. In Iraq and Syria, ISIL distributes women and girls to fighters as spoils of war, systematically rapes them, and sells them in markets like cattle. ISIL has even gone so far as to encourage the sexual assault of prepubescent girls and issue guidelines on how to treat the women and girls who have been enslaved. Boko Haram also exacts horrors upon those whom it has kidnapped and enslaved. On October 2nd, the group reportedly forced four girls and a boy to become suicide bombers in the Nigerian city of Maiduguri, where they self-detonated at a mosque during evening prayers. 15 people, including these kids, were killed, and more than 35 were injured. Witnesses estimated that the bombers were as young as 9 years old. Member states must commit to ending the conflicts that enable human traffickers to operate, as well as support trafficking victims. To address this in Iraq and Syria, where ISIL has enshrined systems of human trafficking and sexual violence, the U.S.-led 65-member coalition remains determined to destroy ISIL, stem the flow of foreign terrorist fighters, and restrict its funding streams used to fuel its reign of terror. The U.S. also continues to provide security and counterterrorism assistance to the governments of Chad, Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Benin to aid their fight against Boko Haram. Human trafficking in conflict is a scourge that knows no borders. That's why U.N. member states must individually combat human trafficking and coordinate efforts now to put a stop to this human tragedy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next time on VOA Africa.